and welcome to What She Said. I'm your host, Lucy Newcraft, a journalist, blogger and podcaster based in Brighton. And you're listening to Series 4, Episode 14, where I talk about white supremacy and how to be a good ally with Rabia Lomas, a.k.a. She Flourished. So before we jump in, I wanted to thank the 5-star reviews this week. Okay, there's only one, but I'm still really chuffed with that. Thanks to AliceF88, who says, I've just discovered Lucy's podcast and I love how to the point she is. An informative, honest and enjoyable listen. Thank you. And I also wanted to thank my lovely new patrons. A huge thanks to Ezra Alamal and Emily Owen, who join Lizzie Harley, Rabia Lomas, Julia Goodall, Amanda Jones, Carly, Natasha Fielden, Jenna Stobbs, Ingrid Marie Keeland, and Jessica Phillips, who all support my work on Patreon every month. Thank you so, so, so much. And actually, I haven't thanked all the people that have supported me in the past. If you know who you are, I really, 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 really appreciate all of your support too. You've helped me so much. And thanks to all of you who download, listen, and share this podcast every week. This is the very last episode of season 4, and right now I'm not planning another season, so it might be the very last ever. So there might be another Podmas this year, but we'll see. I'll obviously have another baby. I'll be in the fourth trimester, so we'll just see how it goes. I've loved creating this podcast. I've really enjoyed connecting with people, cultivating a community around it. I really appreciated my guests and the honesty and wisdom they've brought to the table, but I don't really feel that it's serving me right now, and quite honestly, it's knackering to produce. So instead, I've decided to focus on Patreon, my newsletter, and of course, Instagram. I'm planning a new podcast, and I'll be releasing episodes exclusively for Patreon in the next couple of months. My weekly love letters to my newsletter are back every Sunday, and that'll just be my normal kind of honest ramblings about low impact living, sustainability, musings on freelancing and creative life. Links to everything are in the show notes. So that's that. Today's episode is a juicy one, as ever, and it's particularly brilliant because it's with one of my very favourite in-real-life friends, Rabia Lomas, aka She Flourished. Rabia is a beautiful writer and photographer, and she creates playful, whimsical and political content on her blog and Instagram too. We chatted about her experience of covert racism, how to be a good ally, white supremacy, and that slow fashion takedown. We don't mention the brand in question, but those of you who follow both of us will know exactly who it is. Show it some love over on Instagram if you enjoyed the episode, and please do think about sharing it too. It's potentially the last ever episode of the podcast, so I'd love to go out with a bang. That's it. Enjoy the episode. What the hell are you, Rabia?
Who am I? Who is she? Do you remember that Big Brother character? What was she called? And she's like, who is she? Okay, right, well, I am Rabia. I'm 33 years old. I nearly forgot how old I was then. And I'm a mother and a wife, and I also create content online. So fairly new to blogging. I haven't got that many blog posts up. Not so new to Instagram. I take fun, creative pictures online, and more recently have also been talking about issues that are important to me that revolve around race and identity and intersectional feminism. And when I'm not doing those things, I work full time for an education charity. I work in project management, and I've been doing that kind of job for 10 years in different places and different guises. Yeah, that's me.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
I think it's really interesting how you described what you do, because you could say that you're a writer, photographer and activist.
Oh my God, yeah, I feel fraudy even just sort of saying a writer, because when someone says that they're a writer, I think of people like you, You know, I think of my cousin Rither, who has like poetic words. I think of other people, but not myself. Yeah, I think I need a little bit more confidence in my writing to call myself a writer. But I would call myself a photographer. I would call myself a photographer. I've been doing photography self-learned for at least 2.5 years, and I think I'm pretty good at it. I think I'm all right at editing. So I would call myself a photographer. Yeah. No, that was it.
What's given you the legitimacy to call yourself a photographer? Is it that you have reached certain milestones, or that you work with brands and other people have legitimized it for you?
Yeah, it's two things. Like I definitely am happy with the skills and the knowledge that I've acquired. I'm not the world's best photographer, and I don't have all the kit like all photographers do, because other people don't pay me to take photos of them, but brands do pay for my expertise. So I know that I've got it, and brands are paying me for what I've got as well. The following milestone isn't so much about the photography. I think for me that's a nice indication that people are resonating with my messages, which I'm quite happy about, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Because recently Rabia hit the 10k milestone, which for Instagram bods will know is the delicious full swipe up.
it was really coveted, and my intentions are to make as much good use of that functionality as possible, and I wish it was available to everybody, because it allows you to share directly with people around things that you're really passionate about. But I guess it also allows people to share, you know, direct link to a meme, which may, I don't know, maybe frivolous, but I don't know, I like that. I just wish it was available to everybody, because I've wanted it for so long.
But you know what it does? It keeps us all striving and keeps us all on the app, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If we don't all have it, then there's a huge chunk of us who are still like, oh, one day I could get it. Because actually, you know, it probably sounds like a bit silly if Instagram isn't a big part of your business, or even if it's not a part of your business at all. But having a swipe up is, like, for example, a lot of my business comes through Instagram.
Yes.
And so actually it's just a very practical tool that I need.
Exactly.
Alongside the kind of vanity side of it, and I think that's fine. It's okay to, like, I really love hitting even numbers. I don't have to justify why I love hitting those numbers. I just really like it when it's even.
Exactly. Yeah, I just wish it was available to everyone, because I wanted it for so long for the same practical reasons as you, like swipe to my latest blog post. And, you know, instead I had to just kind of say, go to the link in my bio. And I was kind enough to have friends that did have over 10,000 followers who could then share it on their page. And that's really nice. But you are relying on other people sharing it far and wide. And I think you're similar to me. We like to be self-reliant. Yeah.
So one of the things I want to talk about is, so I've been following you for, I don't know, two years maybe a bit longer.
Really? Gosh.
Yeah, it must be, because it was when I was, I think we must have connected through the Insta retreat.
Yes, I think we did,
which I did but when I was pregnant.
So that's, no, were you?
Yeah. So oh, that was over God. 2 years ago. Mm. Yeah, Sarah Tasker has brought me a lot of friends.
Yeah, I'm me. She's got a lot to answer for bringing all these amazing women into my life.
Yeah, we should probably send her a thank you card for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I connected with you probably about then, and you were already an amazing, established, beautiful photographer then. But what I have seen, and then we became quite close friends in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
What I have seen in that time is actually not so much your photography go through loads and loads of different changes. It's more that I've seen you flourish.
Oh my goodness! I'm blushing. I know that I've been through some changes, but I don't know about flourishing. But again, I think it's a matter of perspective. I think I'm more comfortable in myself, particularly in the last 6 months. I feel like I've been more honest with myself and therefore more honest with people that are following me and, dare I say the word, journey. Yeah, I don't know what to say. I'm a bit like,
so
I'm doing
that
thing.
What was like the pivotal moment where you started to say, I'm a British Pakistani woman and this is because... For people that don't necessarily know you, and I'm pretty sure almost everybody listening to the podcast will, but for people that don't necessarily know you, you hold a number of different facets and you talk a lot about your multifaceted self. But, you know, offline, me and Ritha have talked a lot about the aspect of being a woman of colour, and especially for those of us who are white passing and have that privilege, is the playing up your whiteness. And we sit in a very white crowd, or certainly we probably did even more.
Yes.
When we first started out on Instagram. And we were playing with a crowd of people who were very, very white.
Indeed. And do you know what? I don't know what it was in particular. But a real turning point actually was in September last year, 2018. Up until that point, I was consuming you know, the same content that the wider echo chamber was consuming, lots of aesthetically pleasing Instagrammers run by Instagram accounts run by you know, really quite phenomenal white women who developed lots of knowledge and skill and expertise. But I always felt that everything was a little bit harder for me, and I couldn't quite articulate why. And I started to, I don't know, I think I just got really tired. And I don't know if you felt that, but I got really tired playing by the rules of a game that I didn't really want to get on board with, but I didn't know how else to... you know, how else to make it in the Instagram world at that time. And so, you know, the friends that I made on there were mostly white because those were the circles that we're in. But I started to consume sort of information and content outside of those bubbles, and I could relate to it more. I could relate to those feelings of feeling marginalized and a sort of an extra layer of crap that you have to wade through to even get to the same level. And I was experiencing that both in my professional life, in my career, in the workplace. And I was perceiving that and feeling that in the virtual world as well. And it wasn't until Kate O'Sullivan shared a post from Aroha Knits, where she was talking about her dual heritage and occupying that liminal space and what that means. And it was a real, I'd not resonated with something like that for a long time. And I felt like here was someone that was speaking a language that I could understand, not a language that I had to assimilate. And I shared that on my stories, and there was just utter silence. Even though my stories normally generate good conversation, this was about something really personal to me, and it was silence. So this was in September, and I was kind of gutted about that, because it told me where I felt like I was being told where what I can and can't say, what's acceptable and what isn't acceptable in order to be in with the Instagram crowd. I was kind of done with it, and so I did a live, and it was very raw, and it was kind of my truth, and that generated a lot of feedback. And people were applauding me and white women were applauding me, but I was just a bit confused by that. Obviously, I was really touched, but it was more that I couldn't bend and mold myself into an image that I'm not. And I think in doing so, a lot of other women like me came forward, and that's kind of the best thing that I could have ever hoped for, was to inspire others. It's not my original intention. My original intention was to put my truth out there and be done with it. And I think that was the start of being more open and vulnerable about what it means to be me, unapologetically so, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So the what you were referring to with the IG Live, and I remember we were already friends at this point anyway, but you were talking about, and even though I knew some of this stuff and I knew you pretty well at this point, I still was like, oh, boom, that's a truth bomb and a half. The reason I think that it resonated with so many people, albeit, and we can talk about this in a minute, but albeit resonated in a very passive way, probably, was the example you gave of going into like gift shops. Do you remember that? And then, was it keyrings?
Yeah. It was a keyring, and I could never find my name on a keyring because, you know, if I go to, I remember actually, I think it was like the Museum of Science and Industry in Manchester or something, and they had like these keyrings, and the names were like Sarah and James and Nigel, and, you know, yeah, there was a kid called Nigel, but there was like, you know, a group of us that couldn't find their names, you know. Abdul couldn't find his name, Shueb couldn't find his name, and me, Rabia, could never find my name. And it was like, well, why can't I find my name? And, you know, and I know why I couldn't find my name, and that's because, you know, the people that run the Museum of Science and Industry are all white, so why would they have, you know, any other names apart from the ones that they recognise?
And we should say that, you know, for anybody that doesn't know, Manchester is pretty multicultural. It's not an all-white city. If you're going to...
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's about who holds the power, isn't it? And that's what it comes down to. And actually...
It absolutely is.
And it's the same on Instagram. So you definitely gave me the confidence and permission to show up more in a less palatable way, and so I know that you will have done the same for lots more people. And that then led to an exciting controversy.
Oh my god, in January. Yeah,
it was in January.
So this year, 2019, I thought it was just gonna start off quietly, and it was literally just before I went to go and pick up my son from school. I was scrolling through Instagram, and I kept seeing this dress come up, and I was just like, it's really pretty. Can I say the brand name? I really don't want to give them too much props here, but
yeah, we can refer to them as the
slow fashion brand. And I kept seeing it, and I'd seen it throughout the years, actually, because like people that I know that I follow sort of buying from them. And every time I'd go on to their feed, and it'd just be like white women. And I'm like, oh, okay, so maybe, you know, maybe they've got some like women of color or more size inclusive women like on their feed somewhere. And I'd scroll and scroll and can't find any. And then I'd put it out of my mind, I'm like, oh, well, I'm not buying from them. And then, you know, when you keep seeing the same thing and you're like, oh, that looks nice. And I probably did that about 3 times. And then I thought, oh, no, all right, surely not. I'll go onto their website, nothing, or just sort of white women. And then I would go back onto Instagram and see the same people buying from this brand, essentially like endorsing them, blissfully ignorant about how exclusive it is. And it was a wider metaphor for that whole circle. Do you know what I mean? And so it wasn't even necessarily about the brand, although the brand, you know, has a lot to answer for, and any brand that's exclusive like that has a lot to answer for. It was about the wider narrative of what does it say when there's a lack of representation, when there's a lack of diversity in our structures and in our society, and it's disproportionately, you know, giving advantage to one set of people. That's what it represented to me. And then when I looked at myself and where do I fit into all of that, and the answer was nowhere, I think I just about had enough. Like, I was just fucking done that day, and I don't know what it was, but I was just like, yeah, no. And so it was a very passing story of, I think I actually said, oh, slow fashion brand, blah, you've got beautiful dresses, but I can't see myself here, so that's a shame, something like that. And it all just kicked off. And I think that was because the very people, the very circle that I move in, had their own, oh shit, I didn't see that one. And it was a wake up call. It was a wake the fuck up, I think I said in one of my stories, because I was just like, you kind of need to peep this stuff. And it ain't just in the clothes that you buy. It's in the places that you work in. It's in your social circle. It's in the air that you breathe, you know? So.
And I don't know about you, but I think that was such a powerful moment for, like you say, for people, white women particularly, the most privileged sort of, not necessarily in the margin, anybody differently abled or LGBTQ white women, but white cis women who typically patronised this particular slow fashion brand, and perhaps worked with them or whatever, or just really liked linen.
Yes.
It was a particularly powerful moment for them because they saw it from somebody who they respected and loved and followed and thought of as just one, you know, another one of them in the echo chamber. And then they were like, I mean, I don't want to speak for other people, but I think that's why your voice is so powerful in many ways.
Yeah, quite, what's the word, subversive, disruptive? Yeah, and I get that. But you know what? What am I trying to say here? In order to create space for myself and for women like me, that's what I had to do. Isn't that just bullshit?
And incredibly offensive as well, because I imagine that quite a lot of women who hadn't seen you before, hadn't seen you fully before, were now seeing you, and that...
And some didn't like it. Some did not like it. That one woman who I'd met in real life who called me Instagram famous, I'm not worthy, as she walked past me, you know, and said those words to me, which was lovely, online, told me that I was wrong, that I was divisive, and that I was bullying, and then she proceeded to block me. I'm not even going to say her name because she's a knob. But yeah, she's friends with another knob who also then blocked me and blocked, you know, I think blocked Rither as well. So yeah, there's a few of them.
With the whole, oh, I was about to say their name, with the whole slow fashion brand controversy, which went on for a long, long time, and the result of which were bigger voices in the slow fashion community got involved. There was lots of stuff, activism that was going behind the scenes. A group of us joined forces, and lots and lots of people supported, etc., etc. What happened was this particular brand then started showing using women of colour on their Instagram feed and website, I think. I don't know. I don't really check in with it. But so that was kind of, it wasn't really a, oh, wow, yeah, that's so great. We've, you know, they've done what you asked, but also...
They did the bare minimum.
Yeah, 100% did the bare minimum. And after a lot of emotional labour from a lot of women of colour beforehand. So
yeah,
that was kind of the result of what happened there. But probably for you, from a, on a more personal level, it probably sorted the wheat from the chaff.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. And, you know, still to this day, there are, you know, women that I really thought that we were good friends. They were women that I was showing up for, you know, who just were nowhere to be seen. I was like, if there's like a meme where you're like looking out on the horizon or look peering into the dark, like looking for your friends, and they're just nowhere to be seen. And it was just really disappointing, but also affirming to me at the same time was this new set of women that entered into my life and me into theirs. And we have solid friendships, you know, today, and it's only been like 4 or 5 months. And I'm learning from them as well. They have their own, they sort of sit at different intersections, and, you know, I'm learning from them. They are leaders to me. So in a way, it's, yeah, sort of the wheat from the chaff, and it has also gifted me some amazing friends as well.
Let's talk a little bit about intersectionality and like the messiness of that, because as much as you sit on one intersection, there's stuff that you're learning along the way. And how has that been learning publicly? I don't know if you ever think back to how to things that you might have said this time last year and sort of cringe. I know I do.
I mean, the thing is, I wasn't really talking about any of this stuff last year, really. I think I even have an old blog post from like International Women's Day 2018, which is, I think, crap when I read it back. I've left it up there, actually, because I think it was just rubbish when it was awful. It was really like, yeah, it was terrible. I didn't have any there wasn't any sort of boo-boos theme-wise, but I can really tell that my understanding of it, I wasn't able to articulate it then, but I can articulate, a lot better now. And that's the thing, because I haven't really been talking about it online. I haven't made any mistakes online, but I suspect that I will make mistakes, and I have made mistakes, not so much publicly online, but definitely like in groups. And, you know, I've used terminology that's problematic that I've had to try and exit out of my lexicon. And, you know, I'm still learning that, and I'm not going to be the person that says, oh, this is political correctness gone mad. It's not. It's an education. It's an ongoing. Yeah.
And with that in mind, how do you feel about the kind of call out culture? Because I have very mixed feelings about activism, in terms of, I don't believe that everybody has to be I think everybody should be an activist as much as they can be, and we all start where we are. And if for you, you're an activist in the way that is quiet and is offline, then that's cool. That's absolutely cool. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just thinking when you said that, I think the most important conversations are the ones that we have in real life. And actually sort of online can be a little bit of a red herring.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, so with that in mind, do you think sometimes the call out culture of publicly shaming people for it can mess with that, because it means that people will just stop their learnings?
That's interesting, because I don't believe in shaming somebody, but I do think that if you hold a position of authority in some way, or you're claiming to be an authority in something, then you have, you know, there's responsibility that comes with that. And if you do something that's problematic, it's okay to say what you said there or what you did was problematic, and here's why. That's accountability. So sort of calling out or calling in, whatever you want to call it, for me, that's really more about accountability. And maybe with that slow fashion brand, you know, that was kind of I didn't orchestrate that like a call out. That was me venting my frustration, knowing that a business was operating in such a way that was deliberately exclusive. Whether they perceived that or not, it was still deliberate. Their actions were still deliberate. And I said, I've been saying this to a few people, I don't mind starting the conversation. I just need to be met with action. So I don't mind starting the conversation at all. I don't mind writing those blog posts about what white influencers need to do when working with brands or going on press trips and or spending their privilege. I don't mind writing those things if I'm met with action on the other end. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think because the reason I bring it up is because that was something that we as a group were accused of quite a lot, was this is bullying, you're bullying, I don't believe in a witch hunt, blah 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 blah. And from my point of view, that says everything about the fragility of the accused, as opposed to but I do think people hide behind the excuse of being I am an activist in other ways. I am an activist behind the scenes. And from my point of view, I believe that we should all be doing what we can in the way we can. But I do think typically, in my experience, the people that hold the most power are often the ones that use their power the least. And certainly from my point of view, have been the most silent.
Yes. Yeah. For sure. I don't want to come out with something that's like ableist, but obviously if you are able, you know, those conversations don't necessarily have to happen online, but if you do the majority of your work and you hold a position online and you are able, then yeah, get involved. Yeah. For sure. And I am totally eyeing up the influencer platforms. I reached out to two big ones and just got nothing. When I asked them about inclusiveness and what do they do to ensure it and how do they measure, you know, I asked them all the questions because, you know, I think one of them on their website actually says that they are an inclusive influencer platform. And my first question was, okay, well, how? What does that actually mean? And I want to know that, because until I know how you do that, that's just a video. That's just another thing that you're saying to be marketable. Marketable, is that even a word? Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. That's it. That's it. It's performative.
And how have you found the performative side of activism in terms of, I suppose I'm talking again about allyship, and I want to hammer the point home because I know a huge chunk of my listeners are active online and they're white. So as a learning for people, where does the line come where it's just performative? Where... Do you know what I mean? Because I see those people.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's performative if you... I mean, there's... So, you could be an influencer and, you know, send lots of love my way in the comments, but you won't speak to the head of influencer outreach at the marketing company that you work with, who give you your brand work, and ask them this next campaign, how diverse is it? Are you going to have people of colour? Are you going to have people that aren't just slim, white, cisgendered, able-bodied? If so, who? Can you tell me who's going to be part of it? I don't want to do it unless it's diverse. You know what I mean? So they can, on one hand, sort of show the love to people of colour in a superficial way, but actually they won't act. That's performative. But it's just formative is basically lacking action in every sense.
I think another great example of performative allyship is, or performative activism, not even performative activism, but yeah, performative allyship is, sliding into the DMs and saying, oh my God, I can't believe that brand, they're terrible. But then being given a speaking opportunity, or perhaps even sharing in your stories, this person is amazing, like follow them, they're doing great work, blah, 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 blah. And then being on an all white panel where you haven't given up your space or even questioned that space.
That's it. So yeah, for sure. And maybe, and you know, I'm trying to see the, I've tried giving people the benefit of the doubt, and people need time to learn. And I have to believe that we're going to get there, you know, and it's not going to happen overnight. But at the same time, I can't help but feel sort of disappointed when I do get those DMs where people are hyping me up and sharing my page, but that's as far as it goes, when they've actually got power to do more. And they are, you know, physically and mentally able to do more. I don't want to be ableist, but then, you know, I don't know. You don't know what people are going through, but do you know what I mean? So I don't want to assume anything. But yeah, I do think that more can be done. And that's why I think I will continue to speak out, not just because more can be done. It's ultimately, I do this because I want me and women like me to share the same space, and not just be led by the same narrative.
And dismantle that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It's all in a day's work, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Monday to Monday.
So, where can everybody find you online?
So I'm mostly active on Instagram, so I'm at sheflourished_. I also have a blog, sheflourished.com, and I occasionally dabble on Twitter at sheflourished again. There.
Yeah. So much. What a treat to get to talk to one of my besties. Thank you so much for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoy it. You can get in touch with me on Twitter or Instagram. I'm at Lucy Lee Croft. I'd love you to leave a review for the show if you have time. All of the information that we chatted about in this episode is in the show notes. You can find everything at lucyleecroft.com/podcast. See you next week.